monkey to life. When I shout run, the monkey to life. Shout the monkey to life.
Welcome to my squeaky little voice. Howdy, folks, and welcome. This is episode 24 of the JopeyCast for the week of September 11th, 2006. I'm your host, Joe Jopey Fitzpatrick. The JopeyCast is a bi-monthly podcast that looks at the local music scene of Western Massachusetts. Hey folks, our guest this week is blues, rock, and jazz vocalist Janet Ryan and guitarist, recording engineer slash producer Ray Chappett. We sat down over a few libations and chatted about the blues, the valley, and the importance of music education. I think you're going to like it. In my rant or rave, I'm going to rave about technology for just a bit. The cool internet side of the week has to do with what you're listening to right now, a remix of Peter Gabriel's Shock the Monkey competition. Very cool. And I got a couple shows to talk to you about. So let's get started. Holy freaking cow. New releases? Check this out. Let me pop this up on the old Macintosh. Today, September 12th, listen to the list of people releasing records today. Justin Timberlake, John Mayer, Bare Naked Ladies, Papa Roach, Elton John, Lionel Richie, Bob Seger, Sean Calvin, The Mars Volta, Daz Dillinger, Basement Jacks, Black Label Society, Los Lobos, Peter Frampton, Casey Chambers, Jordan Knight, ooh, Pat Metheny, Mannheim Steamroller, The Robert Cray Band. Unbelievable. That's a lot of releases. And next week, the 19th, look for Newfound Glory, Bone Thugs and Harmony, Indigo Girls, Aaron Neville, another best of, Ben Queller, Jane's Addiction, another best of. All right, we can pass on those. Anyway, some good stuff coming up next couple weeks. So right now, I'd like to rave just a little bit about technology. A few interviews back, I had Hal Benoit on, and he was speaking of how technology has brought music to a bad place. And while, you know, I agree on some of his points, I don't agree on many of them. Technology is what allows me to do the things I do with this podcast, with my students. I'm able to learn songs so quickly now through the iPod and the advent of the computer. Right now, as I'm making this podcast that I'm going to leave out there for you all folks to hear, I'm also sending live video to my webpage through a technology called Flash. Flash technology is exploding recently and is doing some really cool things. You should check that out. You can see this little device here. This is called Stick Cam, but it can do so much more than this. But this Stick Cam thing is pretty cool. Jopey.com, right hand lower corner. You can't miss it. Anyway, taking pictures with my phone, sending them to my website, being able to call my family whenever I want to from wherever I am. These are things that are important to me. Being able to record music and edit it, that's going to bring me right on over to my cool internet side of the week. You're listening to a remix of Shock the Monkey that has been submitted into a contest at realworldremix.com. Of course, there's going to be links at jopey.com. You'll want to check it out from their website. We're pleased to announce the first Real World Remixed competition in association with Peter Gabriel, who's given us Shock the Monkey to remix, and Solid State Logic, who are donating a great prize. We're celebrating 20 years of Real World Studios in the installation of the new SSXL 9000 console in our flagship studio, The Big Room. Yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. But what this is all about is a competition where you get to get the original tracks to Shock the Monkey to remix in any way that you want to, as long as you don't use any other copyrighted material. You can add your own instruments, your own voice, for heaven's sakes. And your mix will be voted on by the people who visit the website, which is also very cool. And the winner wins something very cool. If you're into recording, you're going to like the Duende. The Duende is a processor, a sound processing SSL technology. It was originally in a huge console that cost thousands and thousands of dollars. And now they've turned it into plugins along with, I believe there's a piece of hardware that goes with it, but it's just a single rack space piece of hardware and some great software plugins that is just going to blow your mind if you knew it, I mean. So there you go, Real World Remixed. You're going to want to check this out. That's what my little intro was to the show today. It was a quick little remix that I did in like 5 minutes. And yeah, I'm going to go back and do a real one and submit it. And you better go vote for me, all right? Jopy.com, look for the link. Real World Remix. Real World, by the way, of course, is Peter Gabriel's record label. Pretty cool stuff.
Everybody drink.
Cheers, my friend.
Cheers.
Ladies and germs, in the studio with me tonight, I have the wonderful Janet Ryan and Ray Chappett. Welcome so much to the Jopy Cast.
Thank you, Elaine. We are happy to be here.
Welcome. Welcome. Haven't heard that in a while. It's good to be here.
Janet, I was doing a little reading online, and I read a little bit about your past.
Ooh, none of it's true.
Well, I'm not so sure about that, but I'd like to know a little bit more about when you lived in Chicago.
I lived in Chicago for 12 years. I moved out there in the bitter winter of January 1976. I had transferred from Wheaton College in Norton, Massachusetts, to Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois, and I went out in the middle of the year knowing nobody, and I thought I'd landed on Mars because, first of all, it was a dry town. You had to actually go. Evanston's an interesting little community, heavily regulated by the Women's Christian Temperance Union at the time. And you had to actually sit down at a restaurant there in order to have a beverage. There were no, you know, freestanding bars and consequently no lounges and very little music.
You got to be kidding. And this is in what year?
This is in Evanston in 1976.
Wow.
Soon, however, I discovered the MTA, what's the equivalent of the MTA, which is the L in Chicago, the elevated train. And I would go down to Rogers Park into the north side of Chicago. And it became apparent to me that this was one of the coolest cities in the world for not only music, but just being able to get around, people being friendly, and the whole Midwestern thing is really very true. People are very accepting of you out there. So as I was finishing my schooling at Northwestern, which is where I ended up graduating in 1978, I also learned the enticing business of the restaurant world. I worked very hard while I was at this restaurant called Yesterday's, which was this wonderful little establishment right across from Northwestern. And they had the best cheddar broccoli soup around, so everybody went there. But also, having ventured down to this place, there was this bar in Rogers Park called Biddy Mulligan's. Now, Biddy Mulligan's was home to some real great blues singers. Big Twist and the Mellow Fellows. Junior Wells there. I saw Magic Slim. I saw Coco Taylor. And they'd be playing there like on a Monday night. On a Tuesday night, they had a 17-piece jazz band playing at this bar that was right on the edge of Evanston and Chicago. So you'd get, it was owned by these two preppy, like, you know, like college graduate guys. And there'd be like these old black people that had been in the neighborhood for, you know, 57 years. And there'd be these young preppy kids. And it was just, they had a dog there in the bar, and it was called Bar Dog. That was the name of the, you know. But I saw great, great music there for, you know, like $3. Of course, the whole Chicago genre of music is really cool, and it's very accessible. Not only do they have, I mean, they're really well known for blues, but they also have these really, really cool jazz clubs. And there was this place on the north side called The Back Room. I saw a singer, jazz singer at the time. Her name was Shelly Torres. And I'll never forget, because I was about maybe 19, 20, and I watched her sing. And I said to myself, I want to do this. This is what I have to do this.
That was your crystallizing moment, I think
that
they call
that. That was the proverbial gigantic light bolt, lightning bolt, you know. And it was just a really great place to be in the late 70s and the early 80s. And then, of course, I got carried away into the world of the wedding band business. Which is a whole other chapter, but anyway.
Hey, we all got to make a living. I've done that before.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Great. Tell us about your beginnings. I think you've been in this area most of your life, correct?
Yeah. I've been around since...
Long, long
Just
time.
A few weeks ago,
yeah,
I think,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Last Tuesday. I started performing professionally in 1975. And... done a lot of things, played lots of different music with lots of different people, and we've run the gamut from doing cover bands and wedding bands and starving in original bands, and we have
Isn't
many.
Isn't that what we're doing now?
Yeah. We have many different bands that comprise the same players. We can do your wedding stuff. We can do some jazz stuff or some blues or some pop.
Jesus.
Hey, go get your phone, Joe.
We got your Havana Gila. You know, we got your Let Me Call You Sweetheart. We got your old-time rock and roll. What do you want to hear?
Here's a good story for you. There used to be a little printed magazine called the Dubuque Web Guide, and people would put their websites in it. And I submitted my personal website to it. And this defunct band called Trailer Park also had their website in it, too.
This is a fascinating story.
When Janet first moved to Conway, she was at the first winter. She's there alone. She had her computer, found the little Dubuque web guide. She was emailing musicians, and Trailer Park and I were the only ones that answered her back.
That is correct. Okay. That's correct.
Yeah.
So a chance encounter over the internet is how I met Janet.
I still remember that your email was like gig. I won't give it away, but it was gig mom something. Like,
yes,
that's cool. And the next thing you know, all of a sudden, she shows up at a gig.
Well, it was so funny because I had written you guys and said I'm going to come out and see you tonight. Would it be okay if I sat in? I was used to coming here. Well,
she didn't know Trailer Park.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. And of course, the thing, I was coming from a place in Southern Connecticut where I was living, and I knew lots and lots of musicians, and I was used to being able to go down and you know, walk in, sit in. And I figured, how else am I going to get heard? It's not really like me to ask a band to sit in. It's actually kind of against my religion, my feeling about it, and this has probably hurt me in some respects because I'm not the type of person that will go up and go, hey, hi, I'm a singer, I'd love to sit in, because I feel that it's just, I don't want to broach that kind of boundary. But at that point, I was desperate. I'd been living here for 3 months and I hadn't had a gig in a while. And I was like, oh my God, please let me sit in. And the funny thing was I came out to see you guys anyway. And what was going on with Trailer Park, James Robinson was doing his walk around the room. He was doing his little, you know, with his guitar things, and I started vocally answering him back. And he looked at me with the big eyebrows went up in the air, And he was like, oh, cool. So he stood there and we did that for a while. And when he went back on stage, he called me up. So I went up and I was here. We were at the Amherst Brewing Company.
Yeah.
You remember?
I sure do.
And I remember Greg turned to me and he goes, I know you. You're the email girl. And I was like, what the hell did this guy say? Did he tell everybody that, wow, somebody emailed me today and they're coming out to see us? Like, what's going on with that? But that was the one side of the story. And of course, then the other person that I met was, I had emailed Ray. He said, hi, I'm a singer. I've just moved to the area and I'm looking for work. And he emailed me back. He's like, oh yeah, great. Okay. You're a singer. Yeah, sure. So I sent him a wave file of At Last. And evidently he liked it because he wrote me back and said, hey, this is one of the best I've ever heard. And it was great. Little by little, honey, I'm losing you. I can see. Oh, bit by bit, your love is slipping away from me. Tell me what you're doing, baby. You know it ain't right. How I know what you're doing. And I said, well, I'm doing an open mic up in Vermont at Brattleboro on Thursday night. He goes, oh, you're local? I said, well, that's the reason why I emailed you. No, I'm in California. Let's do a gig together. So he went on tour. He went on tour for a month and came back and said, I'm doing this open mic down in Chicopee. Come down. And I walked in. And I remember there was some female singer in doing a very flat version of some country song. And I stood at the back and I went, oh my God, I've like, you know, walked into like
hell.
This is the dead zone. And I said, I almost turned, it's funny because I almost turned around, walked out, and I went, you know, you never know what could happen. And I did end up, you know, meeting Ray, and I end up singing that night. And
here's a good one for you, though. When she walked into the club and walked up to me, she called me Tom.
Yeah, I did. I said, are you Tom?
As nice. In Mankin.
Because I was thinking, well, the other thing is that I had just met Tommy Whalen 2 weeks ago, too.
Yeah.
And it was the three-letter, you know, boy names. And it was really Ray, Tom, you know.
You guitar players, you're all the same.
Could have been Bob.
Yeah. What's the difference? You're all dumb.
No, it wasn't the guitar player. Well, actually, when I saw his picture on the website, that I went to his website, I said, wow, this guy's Puerto Rican. Because...
Yo, mama.
Uh-oh. I said, okay, and what the heck is Chappet? What kind of name is that?
What is that name anyway?
That's French.
It's French, of course. There it is.
Related to chapeau.
Yeah. Me too. A little bit. On my mama's side. I got one for Ray.
Ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding, ding. Ray, most guitar players tend to be either Strat guys or Gibson guys. Do you tend to have a preference as far as guitar make or style of guitar?
Excellent.
I know.
I'm a collector. And I firmly believe that a guitar has a unique sonic signature. It's kind of like an artist will have a palette of many colors, and he could mix primary colors and get there, but it's a lot quicker just to go to the palette and do that. A Stratocaster has single coil pickups, and it's a thinner sound, where a Les Paul has humbucking pickups, and it is a beefier sound. So certain material calls for a certain type of tone. So I go to my little guitar area.
Library of guitars.
And pick out one that I like. I find as I get older, I'm really liking arch-top guitars, hollow-body guitars. Yeah. I like the way they vibrate and feed back when they're cranked up to patent pending on stage. And I've been playing a Carvin copy of a Gibson 335 now for... about 5 years. I'm kind of stuck on that. I think too many guys actually are running through Stratocasters, and I just try to do something to make my sound a little bit different than everybody else out there. I don't think that many people work on trying to make their tones uniquely theirs. I think a lot of people use the factory presets on stuff.
I've noticed that a lot of guitar players that I see, especially at blues jams, tend to work so much on trying to do these fancy riffs, and I've always been kind of a closet guitar tone buff, which is odd for a vocalist, I suppose, but I've probably paid more attention to the tone in a guitar solo than I have to the lyrics in a Janis Joplin song. And when I heard him play, I really loved, he has this really warm, you know, deep, rich kind of sound, and he always has it. Never sounds, you know, it always has meaning. But anyway, so that's my two cents.
Nice.
Oh, sure. Let's talk about technology.
Oh God.
I had a technology question because I know, Ray, I know that you're a listener to my podcast, and you've probably heard Hal's interview and his sort of take on technology and all. And my general question I usually ask
Ray,
people...
Ray's got a rebuttal.
has technology changed the way that you just interact with music in general?
I believe so. We can go a whole lot on the quality of digital, and we can start where how iPods are a compressed format, and they don't really sound as good as something that would be recorded, say, on an analog 2-inch tape. But the thing is, a roll of 2-inch tape is $300, and it's 17 minutes long. You know, with digital technology has allowed the average person to be able to get their music recorded. And I think that's a good thing. Now, there's always going to be people that are going to extol the virtues of one technology over another. But I think the price has come down so much that an average, you know, a kid with a computer and his guitar, he can at least do something. And he can make a shiny little silver disc. And what we're both music teachers, and as part of what we do, we record them and give them their little silver discs. And to see their faces when they get them, it's like they think it's the greatest thing in the world. Now, I started working with reel-to-reel tape when you did your edits with a razor blade. You physically destroyed the tape. You know, you screw up a customer's work one time, you're out of work. So in that, looking at digital editing with that great undo feature, you can sample all day long, you know, try your edits in different places, and I think it's a good thing. I always like the idea of people getting together in a garage or their basement or anywhere and working on music, and as opposed to, you know, going into the studio and getting mesmerized by the red lights and paying $100 an hour and ending up with something that they really didn't want. I'd much rather see kids working on their little computer with their little tiny interface, mm-hmm. and actually working over arrangements and making them tight.
I think it's a great learning experience. Every time I record, I learn more about, you know, the song or the people, yeah.
The more you record them, the more they can learn what they need to do, because nothing speaks the truth like recording. And I'm not looking for a huge, high-quality sound of a Steinway piano. I'm basically looking for a teaching tool. So my thing is that I think it's made it more accessible to the artists that would not be able to do any recording. This is basically what Ray is saying. I'm just saying, I'm stating it in a different light. But
yeah, from a different point of view, though. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I supported technology from the beginning. I was there when MIDI came out and mm-hmm. learned about sequencers and got real excited that I could actually pluck a few notes
right.
and then say, play that back for me. It could play it back 10 times faster and loop it. And I was like, holy
shit,
I just
cool.
made something.
I know. You know? I know.
It was my first loop. It was like, you know, it
well,
was
we're
great.
A little scientists, too. I mean, I'm the daughter of a scientist mm-hmm. and an engineer. My dad built the first antennas. And my father, he had a ham radio. He was born in 1914. He just passed away a year and a half ago. And at the age of 90, he was this interesting guy who would build antennas and, you know, blow up things in the woods. He was an only child. But one of the things that he did, and because he built the first antenna that received a signal from Falmouth to Boston, the first TV antenna.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was very cutting edge at the time. When RCA built their antenna on top of the Empire State Building, they were impressed by my dad. And so they asked him if he would like to come up to the Empire State Building and climb that antenna and inspect it. And he did.
Did they get a picture of him when he was up there at least?
No, but I have a picture of him on his Harley, on his like 38 Harley.
Nice.
The technology thing fascinates me.
Hey, can we talk about education just a little bit? And I want to just talk about something that happened to me at a gig of yours actually a while ago.
Okay.
I think it might have been Theodore's, one of the first times I was playing Theodore's with you. And you had said something about, oh, when a couple of my students might come up and play first. And I was like, oh, I was like, I'm going to have to sit through a couple of her, you know, what is that? Great. I got to go. And I was like, the whole time my mouth was on the floor with the talent of these kids and the professionalism and just the entertainment thing that they were doing. It was more than just singing. It was like really performing. Mm-hmm. And first, just giving you kudos for getting them out there in front of an audience, because kids don't get enough opportunity at that age.
Yeah.
In an adult situation, they're, you know, that's a real gig situation too. You know, high school band concerts are wonderful, but that's not the real world. You know, the real world is smoky bars and weddings.
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, it's just
bingo.
If you're gonna get paid doing it, you know, let's
smoky bars and weddings. And actually, the kids that you saw for their age, they're somewhat seasoned professionals. They all work with Dan Kane, and Dan Kane's primed them, and they've done some shows. So they've had some focus out there. But I've also, I like to focus on the underdog a little bit and get some of the kids that don't get as much face time out in front of the crowd. And it's a win-win situation, because kids bring out their parents and their parents bring out friends. And it's, you know, it just exposes them to a lot of people and exposes the band to people that wouldn't normally see them. The other thing that I love, speaking of teaching, that I've gotten into doing is songwriting with kids. Oh my goodness. Mm. The six-year-old came to me, and she's my piano student, and she came to me and she goes, I wrote a song. I go, great, sing it for me. It's called I Like Snakes, and it's really cool. It's like, you know, and I immediately sat down at the piano and I put chords to it, and I'm like, okay, we need to record this right away, and we need to get other kids to sing it. But beyond that, I have a student who's been with me for 3 or 4 years, and she's actually kind of a prolific little writer. She's 14, I think, at this point, maybe 15. How old is Amanda?
I think 15.
15. But, I mean, her songwriting is honed to the point where we're writing some really great songs. And the wonderful thing about Amanda is that she has the skill, just say yes. We do this in theater a lot. You know, it's just say yes. Don't say no. Just believe. Go with it. And we'll write things, and I'll say, what do you think? Do you like this? Do you like this? And she's not married to any of her ideas. She's very flexible. I've written stuff with, you know, 3 or 4 of my students, and I'd like to do more, because that gets really exciting. And the other thing is that it's especially exciting because a lot of kids that don't have that personality on stage. Some kids have great voices. They have a wonderful instrument, but they don't really have that outgoing, magnetic personality where they're going to be great performers. And these are the kids that you want to encourage to find their another path. You know, let's try songwriting. Let's do something. Maybe you have a different calling. Maybe it's, you know, it's something else. You know, you have to with kids, you have to get away from this is good and this is bad. You know what I mean? You have to let them know that everybody's just coming from a different place, as opposed to, obviously, in education, there's a right and a wrong. You know what I mean? There's a right way to sing something and there's a wrong way to sing something. I don't want to be misunderstood that I'm one of these people that thinks everything's right. But, you know, you need to recognize individual styles and not push a kid who's naturally shy being a Annie, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, the sun will come out tomorrow. You don't want them to do that, but you want to encourage them to maybe go a different path, but stay on the musical path.
Yeah.
So.
Nice. Ray.
Joe.
You've been teaching a while now. What is teaching giving back to you? Money.
Sorry.
Actually,
heartburn.
Yeah, heartburn, heartache. Teaching to me is a little different than it is to her, but it's nice to be able to give something back, and it all depends on the student. Every student is unique. Some of them are there because their mom wants them to be there, and they don't practice, and, you know, those are the ones I try and help the most, but a lot of times they don't really. The tide comes in and they get washed away. And I live for the ones that actually live and breathe and eat music. And they come in, they go, okay, I got what you showed me last week. I'm interested in this. And I like to help them take a piece of music, analyze it, and pick out the parts that they're interested in and be able to reproduce it. So I think I'll steal a line from Miss Ryan, where teaching makes you better. So, it's been a few years I've been teaching now, and I think I'm a better person as well as a better teacher from it.
Nice.
I like being able to do that.
And this is going to go right into my next question, because I was going to ask both of you, but I'm going to start with you, Ray.
Okay.
What do you think you would be doing if you didn't find music?
I didn't find music. You know that guy down on Main Street, the brown paper bag?
Oh, no.
That would be me. I've always been a pretty hardworking kid. Here's the little quick history. When I was a kid, comic books are big, and in the back of comic books, they'd always have ads, you know. I look back there, and I tried selling greeting cards and Grit magazine, and I failed miserably and all that stuff. But I've tried a little bit of everything. I've picked tobacco when I was 14 years old. One of my coolest jobs, I worked in a movie theater. It was an X-rated movie theater. I was 15. It was wonderful. We used to do stuff like kids would try and sneak in, and we had a Nazi-type woman that was the ticket seller, and if you didn't have an ID, you couldn't get in. So I'd go to the kids, get five of your friends, $5 a piece, be in the back door 10 minutes. They'd sell 20 tickets, and 200 kids would walk out of there, and they never caught me. So I've never been afraid to work. We have to do whatever's needed to pay the bills.
Cool. And what about you, Janet?
There's a couple of professions that I have thought that would be kind of fun. I've always wanted to be, believe it or not, a truck driver. The Kentworth of my dreams. Okay? There's a singer-songwriter that does that song, the Kentworth of my dreams. And have the apartment in the back. And I always thought that would be a great way to see the country, because I've always wanted to travel and drive around and just...
The apartment in the back?
Yeah, the cab in the back, you know. Where you could climb in the back and just sleep. Okay. You know, some of them have a refrigerator and stuff, and you just be like... I always thought it'd be really cool to have to drive with your house, you know, to have a bed and just say, okay, I'm tired, I'm going to stop and sleep here and then move on. The other thing that I would be I'd be an antique dealer.
Cool.
I would actually, because that's my closet thing, that I like antiques and old, weird, bizarre things. And of course, you can't see it because this is a podcast, but my turquoise jewelry, I would probably go out to Santa Fe a lot, and I would go out to the Four Corners, and I would buy up lots and lots of Indian jewelry, Navajo stuff and Zuni and Hopi, and I would bring it back and I would sell it. And I would make money doing that because I'd probably end up, you know, wearing most of it, but that's what I do.
Cool. Hey, can we talk a little bit about your most recent recording?
That would be cool.
Janet Ryan, You Don't Know Me. Tell me about this.
That was kind of a departure from what I've been doing recently, in that a lot of people don't see that side of me in most of my performances. In actuality, it's something that I've been doing. It's a genre of music that I've been doing for many, many years, perhaps longer than I've been singing blues and rock, but it's been ingrained for a long time, not the least of which was because I listened to a lot of that music when I was younger, as a kid, and I kind of internalized it. And then, believe it or not, a lot of this comes from the 18 years that I was in a wedding band. There's always that hour and a half of time when, you know, after the bride walks in, and between the time the bride walks in and you do that whole thing to when they want to dance to, you know, celebrate good times, come on. You know, you have to fill that with something. And we used to call it za music, because it's za, 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 za. Anyway. But beyond that, I actually learned a lot of jazz standards, and I enjoyed singing them and became kind of proficient at them. And as I sang them, I began to really love the melodies and what they actually gave the singer, because there was a time in music when songwriters would write these beautiful, haunting melodies, and they would actually synthesize the words and the melody, so when the emotion would rise, the melody would rise as well. Songwriters like Hoagy Carmichael and Gershwin, Harold Arlen, Billy Strayhorn, which is probably, we all know he wrote Lush Life, which is probably one of the greatest jazz, vocal jazz songs ever written, none of which are on the CD. But beyond that, there's a song called Skylark, which was written by Hoagy Carmichael. Actually, Hoagy Carmichael wrote Georgia. Many people don't realize, you know, that they think Ray Charles wrote it, but Hoagy Carmichael actually wrote that song. But he also wrote a song called Skylark, which we didn't record, but I will in the future. But the melody and the way the chords kind of mesh together, it's so amazing because it actually gives the singer something to latch on to sing, a melody to say, this is something interesting that you can do, and you don't have to be wrapped up in these plebeian kind of melodies. I don't know why, but I'm feeling so sad. I long to try something I never had. Never had no kissing. I've been missing love, a man, oh well, can you be?
I think that when Janet is hitting on those jazz tunes, it sparks a whole different side of her. It's nice to be able for her to show her versatility and her talent at this. These tunes are beautiful tunes. She sings them very understatedly, but she takes them and makes them her own.
But no one to love me, love a man, oh well, can you be? I've heard it said that the thrill of romance can be like a heavenly dream. I go and you'll dry all my tears and whisper sweet little things in my ear, hugging and a kissing. Ooh, what we've been missing, love a man away.
Did recording a CD of jazz standards in that understated way bring on any special recording challenges to you as opposed to recording more of a straight-ahead rock and blues band?
Good question. What I've noticed during the recording of this is because it's the songs are more laid back, there's a lot more room for the music to grow, and that allowed me to experiment with different types of microphones, and it allowed me to pick up different room sounds with different microphones. I've gotten a ribbon microphone, and I've used that in conjunction with one of my high-end vocal mics. I actually used two vocal mics on Janet, and we were actually able to achieve some really warm, subtle tones that when we're doing the heavy, heavy stuff, there's no time for the subtle things to take place. At Eaglebrook School, and they hired me to actually build a little recording studio for them, so we had a space that was probably 70 feet wide by 35, 40 feet wide, out in the country, windows, you could see the squirrels and deers running around, and it made for a good mindset, and I think that Janet got to give really good performances, and I think there's some really nice stuff on the CD.
Yeah. hugging and a kissing. Ooh, what we've been missing. Love a man, oh, where can you be? Love a man, oh, where can you be?
All right, so you got to tell us who we're listening to here. Who's playing what?
This,
okay. That was, first of all, that was beautiful, you guys. That
thanks.
Really, really sweet. Very nice.
The guy who's playing piano is the amazing Chris Coogan. I got to tell you about Chris Coogan. Joe, one of these days I got to get you and Chris Coogan together. Because first of all, with your haircut, you guys look exactly
brothers.
Alike. You're bros.
Nice.
I sang gospel for about 4 years in Weston, Connecticut. And Chris was my gospel choir teacher. He and I also did like a duo gig for a couple years together where he'd play piano and I'd sing. He was also my piano teacher, so we worked very closely together. And
it's on the first CD?
He was on the first CD. Yep, he was on the first CD. Anyway, he came up and did, he's on 4 or 5 cuts on this particular CD. He's incredible. He's actually, you know, young and just amazing. He won the John Lennon songwriting contest in like 2 categories, 3rd and an honorable mention or something like that, and wrote gospel tunes. But anyway, Chris is playing on the lead bass is Jeff Dostal and JD, and he's upright bass, and he came in because we couldn't get the bass part right for this, and he came in and just nailed it. And of course, Coco's playing drums.
Oh, there you go.
Coco's doing this thing on drums. And it's just like a tower trio there.
It's sweet. Very nice. And that was all done at the Eagle Brook School recording studio?
Yes.
Recorded digitally. No, I'm sorry, Hal.
Digitally recorded. Now that I've done 3 CDs with Ray as the engineer, I honestly have to say that I am the happiest with this CD vocally. I grew through the process of this, and I have come to embrace the process.
I have my little story. It's not the destination, it's the journey. And we're enjoying ourselves on this journey.
Janet brought in a little something for us to listen to.
Let's
check this out.
Yes.
I happen to know this band, but you got to tell us who this is.
Okay, this is a band called Sonia Dada. Sonia Dada, D-A-D-A. It's a band of about, I think there's like 8 people here in this band. And here's what I like. First of all, I love the drums in this band. You got to agree with me on that.
Yeah,
the way they EQ the drums on this recording is just speaks to me. Lots of harmonies. All of their music, I've got a couple of albums of theirs now. It's very energetic music. I love this singer. I have no idea what he's saying. I can honestly say, I've been listening to this. It's funny because my son. You
That's
gotta love
that.
I have no idea what they're saying. All I know is that when my son's name is Jonathan, and he was like two, okay, and he's 11 now. I used to drive with him in this, and I remember putting this song on, and he was in the back of the car in the car seat, and I said, Jonathan, screaming John, and he'd be like, his head be going back and forth. We'd be driving back, and he'd be bopping to it. You know, he liked this one, and he liked Toto's Pamela.
Oh yeah.
He liked Pamela. He loved that song. but you know, you talk about your like deserted island songs, okay? Your deserted island CDs, okay? Like, if you had to be on a deserted island, what five CDs would you have, or what five songs would you have? This song, honest to God, I mean, I will listen to it and then I won't listen to it for months, but then I'll listen to it and I have to listen to it like every day. If I need energy, I'll turn this one when I'm going to work at 7 o'clock in the morning. When I'm coming home from a gig at 4 a.m., I will crank this. It will keep me awake when I'm driving back from Springfield. This, Comfortably Numb by Pink Floyd, is one of my... It's a desert island CD, you know what I mean? It's songs that you have to have. But anyway, so that's all I know about it.
Okay, so what's so freaking special about that song?
I gotta tell you, what's special about that particular song, when I was like 13 or 14, this was the first song that I learned to play by ear on the piano.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
There's a couple tricky changes in there, isn't it? Mm.
I quit piano because I didn't like to read music. Mm. I got really bored with the whole, you know.
John Thompson, book one, yeah.
Exactly. Theory is fun. And I wanted to play what I wanted to play. I didn't want to play like the typewriter song or, you know, like Calypso or, you know, that kind of stuff that my piano teacher was giving me. And I listened to this and I heard the piano and I went, I can probably figure this out. And I actually like could sound it out and I figured out. I mean, it didn't have all the clever little hooks that she's doing, but I basically got the sixth. I learned how to play sixth, open sixth on the piano. This was just it was a turning point for me. This song was a turning point for me because I actually learned, you know, how to play something by ear at a young age.
And to learn an appreciation of Joni Mitchell's music at a young age is a sweet thing.
Yeah, I was like, what, 13, 14, 15, maybe 15, something like that.
I didn't even know her name at that age.
Oh, yeah, I was... Well, you know, remember that we grew up in the era when the first Zeppelin album came out when I was like 14, 15 years old. And that was it. That was, you know, like, you know, in the days of my life, I was just tell them what it means to be a man. You know, that was like, and that was the coolest thing that we all, like, we were down at the park, you know, doing things and like listening to Zeppelin on someone's car stereo, and it was like wicked. That was like, man, it's so cool the way they use the like acoustic guitar. They, you know, we, you know, thought they'd reinvented the wheel.
They invented it, and then they reinvented it. If there's one band that sort of stands out for you, Ray, is there somebody that really influenced you as a young musician?
The one that influenced me was Albert Collins.
Every day, baby, when the sun go down, I get with my friends and I begin to clown. I don't care what the people are thinking. I ain't drunk. I'm just drinking.
But you're so high.
Oh, man, you know I ain't high.
But you're so high.
I just take a little bit every now and then.
But you're so high.
Oh, man, you ought to be sharing yourself.
Stay drunk all the time.
Oh, come on now. Now y'all be like that. Come home last night.
Albert Collins, I stumbled into him backwards from, Eric Clapton. And when I was a kid, we used to play Eric Clapton tunes. We'd play Traffic tunes, Grand Funk, Black Sabbath. The nice thing when I was a kid, radio was actually really cool, because every week there'd be a different number one song, and any kind of style had an equal chance of making it to number one. So you could actually, in the course of like your summer vacation, you could hear maybe 25 totally different bands playing totally different music, and it would all get heavy rotation. And back then, they spent the time to develop the talent, and they didn't give up on them. And it's a shame now, because I can't even really listen to radio anymore, because everything sounds crappy to me. I don't see anybody taking any chances anymore with radio. So.
I hear you. No, I can't remember the last time I turned radio on unless there was like absolutely nothing else available. I don't seek out radio anymore.
And as part of your previous conversation about, you know, iPod users and not,
right,
I would say that the dearth of programming would be the main reason people run to an iPod, where they could program the set list that they want to hear,
right,
of tunes that they like.
Bring it on, Mass Live Soundboard. Bring it on. Talk about recording techniques. Holy freaking cow.
And
huh?
That's exactly the reason, that is why I want to talk about this particular band. Because it's like, I know that like this is, I think this was Larry Carlton that did this. I'm not sure if this was Larry or if it was Jay Graydon. It's like they used to go into the studio and they'd look at Larry and they'd go, we'd like that solo to be a little bit more green. And he'd know what they were talking about, you know? But this was the advent of my kind of genesis of learning about listening to songs for the production value.
Right, yeah.
Steely Dan was, when I started listening to Steely Dan, it was like I actually started critically listening to the recording and the engineering and the sound and the tone of the guitar, and appreciating like, wow, that guitar sound sounds really good because blank, you know. And that's what Steely Dan did for me. It gave me a chance to actually critically listen to stuff. I feel this music tends to be, I mean, it's cerebral, but there's a lot of heart behind it. But there's a lot of right brain stuff going on there.
Right.
There's a lot of left brain stuff going on there too.
The two guys, the piano player and the guitar player, Fagan and Becker. They just did an interview where they said, we don't know what the hell we were thinking back then. They said they threw out many tracks because they didn't like the placement of one note in them. And now, talk about an anomaly. Now, try and put a band together now that only did recordings and would not tour.
I know.
It's not going to happen.
I know.
And the funny part is that they've got a studio like in Hawaii on the beach. And you know, and they'd say, "Oh, we gotta go work in the studio." They had sliders to the ocean, and you know, drinks and etc. brought into them for inspiration. And they're actually talking now about doing re-releases of some of the stuff that they didn't consider was quality enough then, but now through reflection of 30 years down the road, they're
they open
the archives and then they go,
"Hey, this is good.
What the hell were we thinking? This is all good stuff."
Yeah.
So, and apparently they're on the road. They've been pretty well accepted, and they're having a ball playing live again.
That's good to know.
So, say what you want about Steely Dan, but you know, when they hit pretty big, and they sold a lot of records.
Got a case of dynamite. I could hold.
Can you tell us about any upcoming gigs that you want to let us know about?
On September 16th, we're going to be in Munson, Massachusetts, for the Quabog Writers Club. And we're going to be playing around 9 o'clock that night. There's a whole boatload of entertainment. Actually, we have a good friend of ours is going to come out and do some... Griffin McMahon is going to come out and play some piano. Griffin is a 15-year-old kid who is an amazing... piano player, vocalist, and he's going to come out and do some stuff there. And they're going to have Marion Street Blues Band and a few other bands, and myself. I don't know what the lineup is, but anyway, of course, you know, we won't know about this until weeks from now. But tomorrow night, of course, you're playing with us up at Andirons in Vermont.
Love it!
Yay, September 1st. We're going to rock the Casbah.
Yeah, we are.
You got your. Your benefit show for Community Music School.
The benefit show for Community Music, the Community Music School of Springfield, which is at Theodore's on October 21st. The working name for it right now is Woman's Work Is Never Done. It's going to feature women in music.
Cool.
Yeah. It's going to be a focus, and which is very cool. And I have to give some props to Steve Walbridge, who is the booker for Theodore's, who came to me actually with the idea. And is working with me on this great, great benefit for a school that desperately needs, you know, all the funds that it can get because it's got a great mission. We give a lot of scholarships away to a lot of young music students. It's a wonderful mecca for great teachers and great students. We're doing a benefit, and all the door is going to go to benefit the Community Music School. We need a new elevator, plus other things. But anyway, there's going to be performances by a lot of the kids, a lot of the students, and we're taking it into kind of a trance performance kind of mode. So that's October 21st, Theodore's, Springfield, Worthington Street.
The school is a wonderful place, and the teachers are all excellent there. And the way that music has been going in public schools, getting less and less attention, it's really important that we try and support schools like this that are allowing people to get into music and do things. There's maybe 70 teachers at the school, and every one of them is wonderful. And it is a great place. CommunityMusicSchool.com.
And I'll have a link to that in the show notes.
We have a couple of other things. We're going to be at the Crossroads in Palmer on October 28th. I don't know. We're back up at Andirons November 4th.
And, of course, there'll be a link to your website right on the show notes at jopie.com so people can check out your website and find your schedule there. It is time for the lightning round. This is the end of the interview.
Bing, bing, bing.
These are either-or questions, or you can say neither. I'm going to start with Janet, and we're going to go boom, bing, boom, bing.
Boom, bing, boom, bing.
Here we go. Ice cream or frozen yogurt?
Ice cream.
Ice cream.
This one's for you. iPod or LP records?
Oh, LP records.
Back roads or the interstate?
Back roads.
TV or a book?
Wrestling, baby.
Pencil and paper or word processor?
Oh, definitely word processor.
Richard Pryor or Jeff Foxworthy?
Oh, Richard Pryor.
Good job.
Standard or automatic?
Standard, as long as I don't have to drive in traffic too much.
And finally, free beer or free food?
Free beer, baby.
Sweet! Thanks so much for coming to the Jopie Cast.
Thank you, Jopie.
Yay, thanks, Jopie.
Well, if you couldn't tell, I had a blast hanging out with my friends, Janet and Ray. And I always have a great time playing with them, too. I hope I get some more chances to gig out with them. Thanks, guys, for coming down. That was fun. Hey, I just want to let you know about a couple shows I saw the other night, and I wish I could have seen both shows for a longer period of time because they were both really good. First, Roots of Creation up at Bishop's Lounge. Darn it all, if that guy doesn't sound like the guy from Sublime. And but with his own unique style, that band's just got something going on. Yeah, Roots of Creation, man. Reggae, funk, dance, it's all right there. You got to check that band out. And then Fancy Trash, I got a chance to see them over at the 11s at their CD release party. And they're going all over the place with the CD as far as traveling and stuff. So best of luck traveling, guys, and you sounded better than ever. Last time I saw them at the 11s, I think it was Josh's acoustic bass broke or something, and he had to play it with an electric, and it wasn't the same. This time he played acoustic, and it was really happening. I was able to stand right up front and take it all in, so... Nice show, guys, and best of luck on your tour. Don't forget, I will be with Ed Vanis every second Wednesday of the month at Bishop's Lounge. That, of course, will be this Wednesday, September 13th. And Saturday, September 16th, I'll be with Satinwood at the Iron Horse. That's a 7 p.m. show. Don't forget, you can always go to jopie.com and hit the Jopie's Summer Old Gigs 2006 link. And check out all the people I'm playing with. Sweet. Well, folks, that is going to bring us to the end of another JopieCast. Be sure to visit jopie.com to find all the links mentioned in today's podcast. Please send me some email, rant or rave. Give me some suggestions for guests you'd like to be on, even if that suggestion is you. All right, be sure to get out and support your local music scene. Thanks for listening. Smell you later. JOPEY.com. Welcome to my squeaky little voice. Welcome to my squeaky little voice, JOPEY.com. Welcome to my squeaky little voice, JOPEY. This week's episode powered by Wingers at the Hangar. With two new flavors. Wingers. It's not so good for you, but good.